Good morning. How's everybody doing today?
Good.
You ready for July 4th weekend? Or week, I guess. The weekend's today, but July 4th week, got big barbecue plans, that kind of stuff. I hope that you and where, especially if you live kind of in and around Eureka, remember to pray for Riley Baker and his, or the family of Riley Baker and all the things that were going with that. You know, it's tough to lose a hero, and so just remember that family in prayer as they wrestle with the loss of their son and brother or you know, whoever, how they're related to him. Anyway, we've been working through the book of Genesis, and Genesis is a book of stories, a lot of great stories in the book of Genesis that tell us about people, but ultimately Genesis is the story of God. It's not really about the people. It is about what God does and how God interacts with people and how God calls them and changes them and makes a difference in their lives. But as we've been going through Genesis, one of the things that I realized as I was kind of studying the first book of the Bible, I began to realize that there were just some crazy, crazy stories. Now, if you were here last week, you probably went home blushing and a little uncomfortable because we dealt with some of the more bizarre stories. Great stories about people who were part of God's family, who God had touched their lives, but man, they end up doing some just really bizarre things. You know, we end up with one guy who, you know, ends up drunk, passed out naked on the floor, another guy who ends up, you know, kind of giving his wife away, another guy who ends up, you know, having just a bizarre relationship with his daughter-in-law. You know, and you read these stories, you go, oh my gosh, why are these in the Bible? And I think there's a lot of reasons. I think one reason that these stories are in the Bible is because it's there to remind us that God did not create people in cookie cutter molds who have to wear just the right clothes and act just the right way. Sometimes people who come to church feel like if you don't act just a certain way and talk just a certain way, if you don't have a little bit of a, you know, Christianese kind of speaking, you know, where you're speaking these and thous, and you know, that you just really can't be right. And nobody looks at themselves and goes, you know, I really fit that mold. But then we try to fit into that mold and just be perfect. And the Bible shows us that the people that God uses aren't. They are really messed up. In fact, one of the things that I've been realizing as I've been studying this, I think most of us tend to have this opinion that there's good people on this earth and bad people on this earth, and God likes the good people, God doesn't like the bad people, and hopefully I can be good enough to be the good people. But that's not the Bible. The Bible says we're all bad people. Jesus is good. Trust Jesus. Just trust him. It's all grace. And we need to come to realize that the book of Genesis just gives us these people who have these major issues. How do we wrestle with that? How do we deal with that? Now, you may be here this morning and you may be one of those people who feel like you're the good people. Listen, you need Jesus. But you may be one of those people here this morning who you came to a point in your life where you had a step of faith. You trusted Jesus. He came into your life and he touched your heart. But there's been struggles. And you felt yourself in this downward spiral, and you're not quite sure what to do with it. This week, I was just brokenhearted when I heard a story of a local church, a church that's very much like us. It's a church that planted about 4 or 5 years ago, brand new church in St. Charles area. And man, God has been blessing them. There's a lot of new Christians in this church and a lot of new people. People who are new to the faith, and they're just kind of figuring Christianity out. They had a guy who was their pastor, who's a good friend of mine, and this guy felt like God was moving him to another place, a position where he could help other churches plant churches. And so when he left that church, there was another man that was part of that church that became the pastor. And he was very dynamic, a guy with a lot of personality. He actually had served as their worship leader, and people just loved him. Last Sunday morning, they had to stand up in front of that church and say, listen, we're not going to do church like we normally do it. Today's going to be really different because we got to tell you something. Our pastor, this guy who'd stepped into this role for the last number of months, has been having an affair with another lady who was on staff at that church. Man, can you imagine the devastation that that church is struggling with? I have this faith. I think it's real. I'm not sure what to do with it. How do I wrestle with the people that I thought were really believers and people that I looked up to ended up not being all that I thought they would be? And how did this happen to this guy? My wife and I had a similar situation. We had this guy that we really looked up to in college. He was the campus pastor at the college we went to. He led worship groups, and we loved him so much. We just cared for him so much, we ended up asking him to do our marriage ceremony. He literally married us and stood on the platform and did our vows and did all this stuff. He was a single guy, incredibly gifted speaker, incredibly gifted person who could do music and just a little bit of everything. He was great in drama and all this stuff, but he was just somebody we really looked up to as a leader. And, you know, he did our wedding, and man, we've got a video. We just loved the way he led our wedding and all this kind of stuff. About 4 or 5 years ago, maybe a little longer than that, we found out that he actually the whole time had been living the life of a homosexual. And it, you know, eventually just kind of rejected God, rejected the faith. And how do I wrestle with that? Because I think his faith was genuine. And maybe you're here today and you've got some kind of story like that in your past. Or maybe you're the one who is on this spiral and you're not quite sure what to do with it because you feel like, you know, I've got a faith that is real. But at the same time, I am struggling in that. How do I wrestle with that? Well, we're going to look at a story of a guy named Lot, who is a guy who was one of God's kids. He's a guy that God changed, but somehow he got wrapped up in this spiral and ends up being a lot of trouble. Hence the title, A Lot of Trouble. Yeah, some of you are going, huh, I don't get it. That's the title, you know. Anyway, the thing is, as I've been going through this series, we decided to take some of these more bizarre stories and put them into one series of messages because I think they all have the same theme, that God uses whacked out people. God uses people who are messed up, who are struggling, who are hurting, who have issues in life. But as he uses those people, if I just left the message last week, if you're here, you understand what I'm talking about. We kind of said that, you know, we all have dirty little secrets that, you know, God takes them, and if I can just trust him, he makes them beautiful. But I can leave that story going, woohoo, man, yeah, I believe Jesus now. Just go live it up because God doesn't care. He ends up with people who do all kinds of weird things. I'm not nearly as bad as those guys in Genesis, so I must be okay. And this morning, what I want to do is I want to wrestle with this story about this guy named Lot, because what he shows us is that if I have faith in Christ, if I've given my life to him, or even if I haven't, and I choose to say, well, I'm just going to go live in a way that just totally dishonors God and does my own thing, the consequences are just tragic and very bizarre. I went this week and saw Superman. And I love Superman because, well, this is what I tell my son. You know why I like Superman so much? You know what he reminds me of? He reminds me a little bit of myself. And so I love the Superman. I'm sorry. My dad used to do that all the time. My dad, that's what he would always tell me when he would look at superhero. You know who the superhero reminds me of? Reminds me a little of myself. And my dad hates movies. I found out this week he went and saw Superman with my mom, which I figured he would because he was looking at it going, yeah, I'm just like him. You know, I mean, that's his mindset. Anyway, you know, but the Superman movie, I was watching it, and I'm not going to give you that. If you haven't seen it, I won't give it away. But the thing I noticed is that there's some things about Superman that are parallels that we can see. Now, I'm not faster than a speeding bullet and, you know, can leap tall buildings a single bound and all that kind of stuff. But I did notice something about Superman. The first thing I noticed is that Superman was sent to this earth as kind of an alien. He wasn't really a resident here. But when he got here, what he was sent by his father. What his father said is, listen, you're going to come to this planet. You're going to be put on this planet. And you are going to live the life of the father on this planet. You're going to represent me, and I'm going to live my life kind of through you. And I figured out that, you know, if you're a person who follows Jesus, that's what God said. God said, I'm going to place my life into you, and you're going to live on this planet as kind of a foreigner, as kind of somebody who doesn't really belong here, but you live this life here representing me. The second thing I noticed is that when Superman, or where he got his power, I found out, I never knew this until I saw this movie. Superman gets his power, gets his energy from the sun. Now, I just thought he, like, flew off into space doing it, you know, when he flies, which, you know, that's so weird to me, you know. He's standing on the ground, and then he flies. Why? You would think he'd have to do something, you know. Or if it's all, it just takes this, why didn't he just, like, fly all the time? How does he come back to Earth? Anyway, deep questions about the movie. Anyway, so Superman is, you know, he flies up into space and he goes above the clouds, and you always have in all these Superman movies these great images of Superman with his little, you know, his cape's flapping and his hair's blowing in the wind, and, you know, And then all of a sudden he flies up and the sun is shining. I never got it until this movie explained that that is literally how he gets his power. There are times where if Superman is feeling the drain of being Superman, he needs to go back out in outer space and feel the warmth of the sun, which re-energizes him. And I went, wow, that's a lot like what it means to be a follower of Jesus, that we're sent, but as we kind of hang out on this earth, there's sometimes we're drained, and the best thing we can do is hang out with the sun. Now, not the sun out on the planet, the Son of God, Jesus. And we can be re-energized by him. But the third thing I noticed, every Superman movie, we end up running into kryptonite. Kryptonite is not good for Superman. Because every time somebody whips out the little green stuff, Superman gets a snot kicked out of him, somebody beats him up, you know, and they just treat him, you know, bad. And, you know, kryptonite is not a good thing. But I did figure this out. Superman does not like kryptonite. It just always happens to sneak up on him. You know, he just kind of is out doing his thing, being super destroying things and lifting stuff. And all of a sudden, somebody, Lex Luthor normally shows up, you know, with his bald head and says, boom, green stuff, poof, and Superman's falling all over the place, falling off cliffs, having all kinds of issues. But here's where we're different from Superman. Superman is destroyed by kryptonite. We are destroyed by loving anything that replaces God in our lives. But Superman doesn't like kryptonite. We are so drawn to the kryptonite in our lives. I mean, I don't know about you, but I have this really bizarre tendency. It will harm you. Woohoo! Let's go for it. I don't know if you're like that. I am. You know, it's not good for you. Let's do it. Yes! Kryptonite. And in the story of Lot, I just kept thinking, you know, if this dude would just leave the kryptonite, if he would just walk away, his life would be okay. And we're going to look at this guy. It's kind of a character story. We're going to be looking through a number of chapters in the Bible. If you have a Bible, we'll start this morning in Genesis chapter 13. If you don't, we'd love for you to take one that's right there at your seat. Just pass it on at the end of the row. We're going to be, you know, in probably around page, I think, 11 or 12 this morning as we start. Actually, page 8 as we start. And we're going to be looking at this guy named Lot. Genesis chapter 13, verses 1 through 5 starts the story. And I just kind of want to set the stage for you. He says, in chapter 13, verse 1 through 5, which is on page 8 in the Bible, if you took one of ours. And by the way, if you don't have a Bible, we would love for you to keep that one as our gift to you this morning. Take it home, use it, read it. God will speak to you through that book that you're holding. Chapter 13, verse 1. So Abraham went up from Egypt, he and his wife, and all that he had, and Lot with him into the Negev. Now, let's set the stage. Who are these people? Well, one guy is a guy named Abram. God touched his life, called him. In fact, starting next week, we're going to start doing a series of messages on the life of Abraham, or Abram. And we're going to look at who this guy is. But Abram is a guy who struggled a little bit in life, and God called him and said, I just want you to follow me. And Abraham said, yes, I will do it. And when he left, when he followed God, he took his nephew Lot with him. And Lot is this guy who's kind of tagging along. He's just kind of this tag along with Abraham. And somewhere in the story, we're not quite sure where, but somewhere in the story, Abraham's faith rubbed off. Before God called him, they believed in just all kinds of gods, all kinds of religions, kind of, you know, American spirituality. I'll take this God, that God, put it into a nice, neat little package and believe whatever I want to. And Abraham came to a point where he said, there's one God. I'm going to follow that one God. And Lot watched him as he followed the one God. Lot observed this godly man, and he even saw Abraham when he failed. We talked about that last week when Abraham went to Egypt, and Abraham really messed up. He literally gave his wife away because he was afraid. He didn't trust God and kind of pimped out his wife, and man, just created a mess for himself. But God spoke to the life of Abraham, and Abraham went, what am I doing? I've got to honor and serve and follow God. And so he returns from Egypt back to this place. And he says, he went up into the Negev. In verse 2, now Abraham was very rich in livestock and silver, gold, and he journeyed on from the Negev as far as Bethel. Bethel. The word Bethel means house of God. The rest of the book of Genesis is the most important place in the entire book because this is the place where God's people over and over and over again come back to say, I need to meet with God again. I need to come back to the house of God and meet with him. And Abraham builds an altar there. And what's going on is that Lot is watching him have this incredible faith in God. somewhere along the journey, it rubs off, and Lot says, I'm rejecting other gods, I'm following the one God, I'm trusting him. But Abraham goes on to have this life that has incredible struggles, incredible failures, but this bent that keeps saying, but I will honor God. Lot just begins on this downward spiral. Now, lest you think, well, I don't really think Lot's a true believer, I want you to see what 2 Peter says about him. Look at this. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 7 and 8 talks about that God, he rescued Lot, a righteous man who was distressed by the filthy lives of lawless men. For that righteous man living among them day after day was tormented in his righteous soul by the lawless deeds he saw and heard. Now, what's going on? He's describing the events that take place in this town, these two towns called Sodom and Gomorrah. We're going to look at the whole story is about Lot in Sodom and Gomorrah. Sodom was the worst city out there. In fact, we're going to in the story, you will find out that basically it was such a nasty, vile city that when these two guys show up in the city, these two men pull into town and go to Lot's house, the whole city, all the men of the city come out of their houses and say, man, we saw these two guys that came to your house. Bring them out here in the street so we can have sex with them. So we can, you know, just cavort with them and do whatever we want to. We want to rape the guys in your house. This is Sodom. It is a nasty town. But as we look at this, the Bible says right here, listen, even though Lot failed, even though he rejected everything, Lot ends up, I mean, he was just drawn to kryptonite. He did have a real faith somewhere. And God honored that. Because see, if you have a relationship with Jesus, it's not about you, it's about him. It's about God in your life. He does it all. But there are some people, tragically, who have a real faith at some point in time, and I believe that faith can save them. But then they begin on this downward spiral that they just they can't get the kryptonite out of their lives. And on one hand, they really kind of want to grab over here and have faith in God, but they just won't reject the things that hold them back and destroy them. And God loves you. He loves me. When he calls us to things and calls us away from things, it's not that he's going, don't have fun. He knows they're kryptonite. He knows that when I end up with this green stuff that I hold in my hand, I'm going to end up getting the snot beat out of me and my life is going to hurt bad. And he wants better things for you. Same thing's true for Lot. This is what this guy's life is, though. He walked with Abraham, knew Abraham, got to change his life. But then some things begin to happen. And we're going to be looking this morning at the story of Lot and how this there's kind of some steps that he takes as Sodom becomes his kryptonite. That's the thing you need to understand. Sodom, this city, becomes the thing that he is just drawn to, and he just runs to it. He can't get away from it, but as he's drawn to it and he can't get away from it, it becomes a thing that literally from the inside out begins to destroy him. He passes everything he is on to his kids. It's just a mess. And you ought to see Lot and say, listen, Lot should have ended up like Abraham. He should have been a champion of the faith, not who he ends up being. So chapter 13, verse 8, gets into the story, and it says, Abraham said to Lot, let there be no strife between you and me, between your herdsmen and my herdsmen, for we're kinsmen. Is not the whole land before you? Separate yourself from me. If you take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if you take the right hand, then I will go to the left. Lot and Abraham had become very wealthy because God had blessed them. God had blessed them financially. It's not a promise from the Bible that it will happen, but it did for Abraham and Lot. And they were blessed financially. But the thing that you got to see is that Lot is blessed because he is living with Abraham. And now they've got all these herds, and they just got all kinds of tents and all kinds of people who are, you know, following them and taking care of their sheep and shepherds and all this kind of stuff. And now they're getting into fights. And Abraham comes and says, listen, this isn't working out. We've got a problem here. This isn't working out. Let's separate. And they go up on top of this hill that's near this place called Bethel, and they check it out, and they look out, and he says to Lot, listen, you choose which way you want to go. If you go that way, I'll go this way. If you go this way, I'll go that way. Lot, you get the choice. Have you ever had one of those conversations where somebody said to you, you know, you choose, and what you really want to do is you want to go, I want this, but you went, you know, you make the choice. You know, maybe it's what movie to go see or something. You just have the one of those, you know, what do you want to do? I don't care. What do you want to do? You know, most times when guys call up a girl, this is a conversation. Well, what do you want to do Friday night? I don't care. What do you want to do? Well, I don't care. What do you want to do? I don't care. But that's not Lot. Lot is not like this. Lot is, yeah, I'm going this way. And what he does is he looks down into this Jordan Valley. He looks down into this incredible valley, and he sees that it is green, it is well-watered, it is beautiful, and he goes, hey, I'm going to take care of me. And he kind of looks at Abraham, and he goes, this is my chance. You know, my uncle is kind of, you know, he's like, believes in God, but sometimes, you know, I have real faith, I believe in God. Sometimes that just is too much for me. I mean, he's just kind of like a Jesus freak kind of guy, and I'm not quite there. I really like to hang out in different places and go do different things. Plus, man, even though I'm rich now, if I went down there, oh my gosh, I would be stacked. It's just beautiful. And, you know, we could set up, you know, like this beachfront property and hang out, and it would just be wonderful. Woohoo! And Lot goes, okay, I'm going there. Now, what Lot should have done is said, you know, Uncle Abram, you're older than me. I'm blessed because of you. You make the choice, but not Lot. Lot is always looking out for himself. It's all about me. I'm going that way. I'm doing this thing. And the Bible tells us here that he ends up near Sodom. Near Sodom. Chapter 13, verse 10. Lot lifted up his eyes and saw that the Jordan Valley was well watered everywhere, like the garden of the Lord, the land of Egypt in the direction of Zoar. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself all the Jordan Valley, and Lot journeyed east. Thus they separated from each other. Verse 11 is the key verse in the whole story. Lot broke his ties with his uncle, who was the godly guy around him, and he journeyed east, and he went and he set up his tent. He figured out where he was going to live, and it was just outside of this kryptonite town for him, Sodom. And he just kind of lives there. You know, this is the situation where you and I are just kind of hanging out, and we're like, you know, I'm drawn to God, and I want what he wants for me, but I really also really want what I want for me. And this is where Lot ends up, near Sodom. And he starts embracing kryptonite. And the closer he gets to kryptonite, the more it starts messing with him. Well, in chapter 14, we find out that not only is Lot near Sodom, but Lot ends up in Sodom. So what happens is there are these five kings who are around Sodom, all these towns around Sodom. There's these four kings that come from like over by the sea. And the four kings kind of get angry with the five kings, and they come create this war, and they start battling. And as they're battling in chapter 14, they're battling. There's these tar pits. It's, you know, the Bible's kind of graphic and tells us everything. And these guys are like being thrown into tar pits, and some of them are just being chased down. They dive into tar pits. Others end up in a mountain. But then the four kings conquer the five kings and destroy and take everybody from the city of Sodom. And Lot is literally living in Sodom. Chapter 14, verse 8 says, the king of Sodom and the king of Gomorrah, the king of Admah, the king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela went out and joined the battle of Sodom and Sherdalander, name your kid that, king of Elam, title king of Goyim, Amphrael, king of Shinar, and Arioch, king of Elasar, four kings against five. And it goes on to talk about this, the battle, and then verse 13. Then one who escaped came to Abram, the Hebrew, who was living by the oaks of Mamre, the Amorite, brother of Eshol and of Aner, and they were allies of Abram. And when Abram heard that his kinsmen had been taken captive, he led his trained men born in his house, 318 of them, and went in pursuit as far as Dan. Lot gets captured. Abram is off living. You know, they've separated. There's been a period of time. Lot has moved from outside. Now he's living in the middle of Sodom. And now this war takes place. And I really believe that this whole story is a picture of how God's grace works in us sometimes when we say, you know what, I'm comfortable with my own life. Yeah, I have faith, but I'm kind of walking away from it. That God has this incredible way of bringing warnings in our life to say, listen, go back, return. And so Lot's just hanging out with his family. They're barbecuing, you know, they're having a good old time. All of a sudden, these five kings show up, boom, and just rip him and his family and everything he owns and takes off with it. And they take off to the north, and Lot, his family, I mean, can you imagine what's going on? How the women are being treated? I mean, it's just vile, nasty stuff. And Lot is stolen from his home and is, you know, put in this situation. Well, then one of the guys escapes and goes finds Uncle Abraham and says, dude, your nephew just got ripped off, man. Your nephew just got taken from here. What are you going to do? And so, you know, it was 5 Kings on 4. This is what Abraham. Abraham goes and finds 318 dudes. And said, let's go hunt them down. They take off with their 318 dudes. They catch them. And in the middle of the night, they just beat them all and get Lot back. It's about 100 miles away. Dan, where they end up, is about 100 miles away. Here we go. You know, can you imagine Lot's ride home? I mean, he hadn't seen his uncle since the day they got up on the mountaintop and said, which way do you want to go? And for the last number of years, he went from being outside Lot, outside Sodom, to being in the middle of Sodom. And now he's wrestling with, what do I do? And God literally brings a situation in the life of Lot that says, listen, I have something that's so much better for you. I do. I have something that's so much better for you. But Lot's kind of like where I live. Kind of like kryptonite. Kind of like holding on to this green stuff. And Lot literally starts getting beat up for it. And, you know, I can just imagine that ride home with Abraham. As Abraham is trying to wrestle with, what's going on with you, man? Dude, I pray for you all the time. What's happening in your life? And God brings circumstances into our lives that are warnings. This is for this guy and this girl are hanging out, you know, and they're close. And then all of a sudden they start going too far. And all of a sudden she misses her cycle. And for 3 or 4 days, there's utter terror. Oh, my gosh, what are we going to do? How am I going to tell my parents? What's going to happen? And then it doesn't end up being a pregnancy. This is the guy who, is out just hanging out and just kind of partying, having a good old time. And he has an accident, but it's just a minor one. This is a situation where God brings circumstances in the lives of those he loves. And they seem harsh, but they are God's way of saying, hey, don't forget who you are. You're Superman. Don't forget who you are. Kryptonite harms you. Don't forget. And then God has this incredible way of bringing people into our lives that just love us and show God's love to us and say, listen, I'm praying for you. I know you're having a rough time. And we have a great ability to run to kryptonite and to put our hands up to those people and say, I don't really want to hear you. And they are really messengers from God that are sent to us by his love and grace for us. That's what happens with Lot. Lot just goes back to Sodom. And about 20 years passes. And his 20 years, he lives in Sodom. His faith never comes up. He ends up marrying a woman who's just from Sodom. He has kids. They don't really get his faith at all. He doesn't talk about it, doesn't bring it up. He just kind of lives the life of Sodom. And he goes from living in Sodom to really being consumed and really being integrated into Sodom, being associated with Sodom. In chapter 19, tells us a story, and I'm just going to real quick buzz through what happens because I really want to get to the gist of what I'm trying to say to you this morning because it's exciting. Lot has gone from being this guy who hangs out with a godly guy and has a faith that is real to being close to Sodom, to being in Sodom. And what happens in the midst of this is that this town Sodom just gets more vile, more wicked, more rebellious against God, and God finally says, listen, I'm going to deal with this town. And he sends 3 guys, 2 angels, and Jesus himself. And these 3 guys come to Abraham first. They have this long discussion with Abraham about the fact that God's going to bless Abraham in some certain ways. We'll get to that in a few weeks. And then Jesus himself says, Abraham and I are partners. I need to tell him what I'm about to do. The angels leave, and Jesus hangs out. The pre-incarnate, before he came to earth, Jesus takes on flesh and is hanging out with Abraham, but Abraham knows he's talking to God. And Jesus is talking with Abraham, and he says, listen, I just want to let you know I'm going to destroy Sodom. And Abraham is thinking, but Lot lives there, his family. I haven't seen him in a long time. He's kind of pushed me out of his life. He doesn't want to hear what I have to say. He don't want to have, but my heart is broken because I know my nephew is there. I don't want this town to go down because I know what's going to happen to him. And Abraham says, all right, hold on. Listen, I know my nephew's been down there. What if there were 50 church-going righteous people, 50 people in that town who loved God, who followed God, big old town, 50 people. And Jesus says, hey, if there's 50 people, I'll spare it. All right, God, I don't want to push too hard. What if there are 40? 40 people, I would spare the city. Please don't find me annoying, God, but what if there were 30? I mean, I'm just praying that for 30 people you'd spare. And the Lord says, hey, 30 people, I'll spare it. How about 20? 20. Hey, my nephew's been down there a long time. There's got to be 10 people that he's talked to about his faith. There's got to be 10 people out there. Lord, would you spare the town for 10 people? And God says, if there are 10 righteous people, I'll spare it. And the two angels go on before him. When the two angels go on before him, they end up in town and they find Lot. Chapter 19, verse 1 says that they found Lot at the gate of Sodom. And what happens at the gate? The people who sit at the gate are the elders or the judges of the town. Now, the Bible tells us later that Lot was not participating in the lifestyle. But what is going on is Lot is sitting at the gate as the one who now has the authority to determine if something is right or wrong. And he is now standing in a place of judgment and never choosing to deal with the issues in Sodom. He doesn't tell anybody about faith. He doesn't stand up and say, you know, there is one God. We can trust him. He's good. He just is living his life. And now he's been put in this position where he's kind of the leader of the city in some way, shape, or form, sitting at the gate. These two angels show up and they say, hey, we're going to spend the night here in the middle of town square. And Lot's like, dudes, not a good idea. This city is not the place. You know, this is, you know, Las Vegas, the strip. You don't want to sleep on the streets here. Not a good idea. Come stay at my house. By the time they get to Lot's house, the men of the city realize there's two new dudes in town. I mentioned this. Come out of the woodwork, and they start banging on Lot's door saying, we saw that you got new guys. Bring them out here. We want to have our way with them. We want to hang out with them. We want to make it, you know, make it a good time for them. Woo-hoo! And the angels, Lot's like, you know, I don't think you ought to be doing this. And this is what happens. This is so bizarre. Lot says, listen, you don't want to do this. These guys are strangers to our town. They don't know anything about this town. Don't mess with them. I've got these two daughters, these two virgin daughters. They've got husbands to be. They're betrothed. They're going to get married. We've kind of got a contractual obligation with these two families. There's two sons-in-laws. The wedding's in a couple weeks. But up till now, they've not been with any guy. Listen, here, take them. Rape them. Mess them over. Just don't mess with these guys. How weird and bizarre Lot's life winds up. You know, the day my daughter was born, I went out on the internet and I found this application that is titled The Application to Date My Daughter. Starts off with name, date of birth, height, weight, IQ, grade point average, social security, driver's license, and Boy Scout rank. Next question is, do you own a van or a truck with oversized tires? How about a waterbed? If yes to any of the previous questions, just leave the application on the table and leave. Next question, in 50 words or less, what does late mean to you? In 50 words or less, what does do not touch my daughter mean to you? In 50 words or less, what does abstinence mean to you? What would be the best time to interview your father, mother, and your pastor? Answer the following questions. Please answer freely. All answers are confidential. That means I won't tell anyone, at least as far as you know. A, if I were shot, the last place in my body I would want to be wounded is. B, if I were beaten, the last bone I would want broken is my. C, a woman's place is in the. One thing I hope this application does not ask me about is, and when I first meet a girl, the first thing I notice about her is, and finally, what do you want to be if you grow up? I swear the information supplied above is true and correct, and then it goes on to say, thank you for your interest. Please allow 4 to 6 years for processing. Application to date, my daughter. See, Lot didn't have this information in front of him. He wasn't thinking. You know, there's a lot of things in life that really anger me. But if somebody messed with my daughter in that way, I don't know what I'd do. This man of God, this guy who had a real faith, who watched his uncle serve God and at some point gave his life to God himself, is standing behind his door going, take my daughters. Dude, what a spiral. That's what kryptonite does to us. And some people in life hear, you know, like, oh, preaching, you know, that's just going to tell me, don't be bad, I must be good. No, it's going to tell you, trust God, trust Christ. But when God says, listen, there's things that I just don't think are best, it's not because he's a killjoy. It's because he desperately loves us. And he wants the best for us. He knows what kryptonite does. And Lot ends up in the gates overnight. What basically happens is the angels spare Lot and his daughters and literally strike these guys blind, which has got to be like one of the weirdest things. I mean, could you imagine being like in the middle of the gay parade parade, gay pride parade, and next thing you know, everybody's blind? Or you're blind. That's got to be like incredibly uncomfortable. And they're like running for their lives, not sure what somebody's going to do to me now. And they run away. God spares them. And then the angels grab them and said, listen, we have got to get out of here. He goes and tells his sons-in-law. He says, listen, this city, God's going to deal with it. We've got to get out of here. And the guys who are engaged to his daughters look at him and go, man, you're a freak. And it says that they thought he was just joking. He was just making something up. Because they'd never heard him talk about God in their lives. And now he's some religious fanatic guy. This is a big joke. He's just teasing us. And they won't go. His wife and his daughters are like, should we go? Should we stay? Fire and brimstone's going to come down and the town's going to be destroyed, but we really like it here. It's a good home. And literally, these angels grab them by the arms and drag them out of town. And in the midst of it, they're dragging them out of town, and the angels say, listen, go back to the mountain. Go back to the top of the hill. Go back to Bethel. And Abraham says, no, I'm not going back there. Let me go to that city over there. And he still will not go back to the place where he left Abraham. It is so sad. And the end result is that his wife is literally running away from the town and stops. And the Bible says she turns back and looks. It's not just like she was running and went, psh, boom. And God begins to rain fire and brimstone. He destroys the towns. He deals with the wickedness of the people. She turns back, but it's not just like she went, boom, and kept running. It is literally a picture of somebody who said, I can't leave here. I'm not going. And she turns back. And the Bible tells us that God literally turned her into a pillar of salt. Now, here's the deal. Abraham, his whole life, builds altars. There are these stands that say, this is what my life is about. The altar of Lot's life is his wife, who literally is stolen from him in the midst of this situation. And this is Lot. This is who he is. But it gets worse because, he is associated with Lot. Eventually, we find out that Sodom really got into Lot. Because this end of Lot's story in chapter 19, they run to this town, they can't live there. They end up broke, destitute, he and his two daughters living in a cave with nothing. And his daughters are in a cave going, we live here all alone. There's no way we can have children or have sex or do anything like that. And we're kind of bored. Let's get our dad drunk. That would be funny. And they start drinking with their dad. They get him drunk, and the oldest daughter goes, you know what? I want to have some fun. I'd really like to have a kid. And she goes in and literally sleeps with her dad when he's drunk and passed out. The second daughter goes, that was a lot of fun. Let's do it again. And the second night, she does the same thing. The end of the story of Lot is this picture of this guy holding his children / grandchildren. Kind of an I'm my own grandpa thing, And that's how the story of Lot ends. This guy who had a real faith. And the reason it's so sad is because I've had so many situations with people. And that's their life story. There's this girl we worked with. Her name was Janie. Her dad was a pastor. A little redheaded girl. She was about 14 years old. And if you'd have held a vote in my youth group at that time, who was the most likely to be a world missionary and change the world forever, she would have voted unanimously. She just had a real faith. She shared her faith with her friends, just really real. And as she got into her late high school years or college years, she started this downward spiral, started being, drawn to kryptonite. And it just started getting in her life. And last I heard, she literally was living on the street, turning tricks. It just kills me. Because she could have had a great life. And she's broken and hurting. And God doesn't want that for his people. He wants us to live the life of Superman. To draw power from the sun and live this thing. And that's just kind of the challenge I have. Now, some of you are sitting here looking and saying, well, there it is, the story that says, I got to leave everything and go live in a little church, a little quiet community. I can't be around it. No, that's not it at all. I don't think the problem with Lot was living in Sodom. It's that he was drawn to what Sodom offered. I think cookie-cutter Christianity is a mess. I think if we feel like we all got to look alike and we can't have any problems and we've got to be perfect, that we're going to create something that's not real anyway. And I don't believe in that. I don't want that here. I want people to be genuine and people to have struggles. But this is what I hope for you. I hope the story of Lot reminds you that there's a God who loves you. And even when I'm struggling, turn back to him. That's what Lot never did. Abraham does it all the time. Lot never does it. And so just kind of in challenge as I close this morning, I just want to tell you what ought to happen in your life. If you want to come back, and if you're struggling or when you're struggling, what should you do? And first of all, I'm going to tell you, you should return to the place of God. You should return to the place of God, the place that God called you, your Bethel. For you, you know, you may have met God and had the last real experience may have been at a Bible study. Get to a Bible study. It may have been in a service somewhere. It may have been a time where you were off, you know, on a mountain somewhere. Go find your place with God and hang out with him again. Get alone with him. And go find people of God. Go find that person who over the last 10 years has been the one who keeps telling you, listen, I love you. I'm praying for you. I know things are hard. I know that you don't really, you know, God's not working for you, but I just want you to know I'm praying. Go find that person. Spend some time with them. If Lot would have just gone back to Abraham and said, listen, I'm struggling. Pray with me. And go find the purpose of God. The saddest thing about this whole story for me is the fact that Lot lived for at least 20 years in Sodom. And there weren't 10 righteous people. And see, that's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping Genesis, we will be a church, a group of people that have struggles, that have secrets that we wrestle with, but we keep turning to God, coming back to the Son, trusting him. He keeps empowering us. And then this place we live that is called Eureka will be different in a few years because we were here. Not because we were perfect, not because we were cookie cutter, not because everything worked out right, not because we all dressed alike or talked alike, but because we just really loved Jesus, because Jesus really made a difference in us. And we take the person that I am with the struggles that I am and give them to God, keep coming back to the Son, trusting him, building altars, places to remind people that we love Jesus, and they see it. And all of a sudden, there's people in Eureka whose lives are different because we were here. That's the saddest thing about Lot. 20 years in Sodom, nobody knew anything about his faith. I don't want Lot's life. I hope you don't either. I hope you realize that God has something awesome for you. We'd love to chit-chat with you about that. But we also realize that the cross is what makes the difference. The thing about all these whacked-out people, the stories we've been trying to tell you is this, that God has this unbelievable way of making things that are struggles in life beautiful. For the last few weeks, Caroline's been up here hanging out with us, and you've been watching her paint. And if you were here all 3 weeks, probably the first week you were looking at it and you went, what is she doing? That's weird. And why is she just up there painting? And we purposefully didn't say anything. And then last week she kind of got more done. Now she's kind of finished this. And what a great image. An image of all the brokenness that this world has to offer. All the kryptonite that's out there that we can be drawn to, that we can run to. But ultimately in the middle of it is the cross. And up in the right-hand corner is the goblet that is a picture of what Jesus did for us, an image of taking communion and remembering the body and blood of Jesus. I appreciate Caroline doing this for us. I just think it's a really cool image for us to remember. And I just want to let you know that that's the story of the gospel. The story of the gospel is that God takes our messed up lives and makes them good by the power of Jesus. Part of what Jesus did is he gave us a time where we can remember that. Where he literally says, when you do this, do it in remembrance of me. The juice is a picture of the blood of Jesus that he gave on the cross for you and for me. The bread is a picture of his body that was broken. And we do this. There's some things that need to happen. You need to, first of all, reflect and be focused on what, you know, issues in my life. What are the kryptonite that I'm holding on to that I need to just say, God, I need to follow you. And along with that, we need to remember what Jesus did for us. This time is the time of reflecting on the cross and the great price that he paid. Communion is for people who have a real faith in Jesus. If you're a believer in God and have a real faith in Jesus, we want to encourage you to just participate with us. if God leads you to. If you're uncomfortable, that's fine. Just stay where you are. This is a response. It's only one response this morning. We're also going to have the response of worship. We're going to be singing. We would invite you to stand, sit, kneel, whatever you feel comfortable do, and worship and just say, God, my heart longs for you. I don't want to be like Lot. We're also, as you come and participate in communion, if you're part of Genesis, giving is one of our responses. It's a way for us to say, God has given so much, and we're going to return to you this morning. Our offering plates are down here, and you know, if you're not part of Genesis, we aren't asking for you to give anything. But it's a way for those who are part of our church to say, this is what God's done in my life, and I'm giving back. If you're here this morning and you don't have a relationship with God, if you can't even say like Lot, I've trusted God, or like Abraham, I want to tell you that you can just stop right now where you are, just quietly in the moment and say, Jesus, I don't get everything, but I do know this. I need you in my life. He'll honor that prayer. And if you want to know more about that, I'd love to talk to you about that. I'll be out at the information table after service is over. I'd love to chit-chat with you. But as we worship, when you feel led, when you feel comfortable, you come on down and take communion. Remember Jesus and the cross. And just if you're struggling this morning, if you're like Lot and you're in the spiral, I just want to encourage you. God is faithful. He loves you. He'll make a Superman life if you can find a way to just turn and trust him. Jesus, we praise you today. We honor you. Speak to our hearts. Move in our lives as we participate in remembering what you've done for us today. Just pray they'll just be huge in us. We love you, Jesus. In your name I pray. Amen.